Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest running podcast, now in our 17th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we feature a discussion with Jay Snowden, the president and CEO of Penn Entertainment, on the progress of both the land-based and online gaming sides of his company. This week's podcast is sponsored by IGT, which is at the peak of excellence with an entire lineup of top-ranked gaming machines. Reach your peak of success at IGT.com/peak. Penn Entertainment, formerly Penn National Gaming, has been evolving, as the new name might suggest. CEO Jay Snowden has a vision for his company to become an omni-channel giant with its own technology and content that complements the extensive network of land-based casinos across the U.S. He talks about the new shape of 4 casinos in 3 states, as well as the purchase of the remaining part of Barstool Sports that Penn did not own. He also talks about theScore in Canada and how it has helped Penn grab a big piece of market share in the largest market in Canada, Ontario. He spoke with me at G2E in Las Vegas in October. Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. My guest today is Jay Snowden, the CEO and president of Penn Entertainment. Jay, that's another thing that's changed since we've seen each other for a year ago, I guess. So give us an idea why you changed the name of the company.
Yeah, well, actually for several reasons. We've evolved so much as a company over the course of the last mainly 3 or 4 years.
Right.
We were predominantly a regional gaming company.
Right.
And we had spun off all of our real estate in 2013, 2014. And what we've been really focused on over the last 3 or 4 years is evolution into more of an entertainment company.
Sure.
We now are the owner of two of the best sports media brands in North America with
right.
Barstool Sports and theScore. We also now are operating in 14 states as an online sports betting operator.
Right. Yep.
And a handful from an online casino perspective. We're live now in Ontario, so we're now international, if you consider across the line in Canada.
Right.
And so we felt like National Gaming Inc. doesn't really describe who we are anymore.
Sure, right.
It's not a great descriptor, and we felt entertainment was broadly more appropriate for
sure,
us.
Yeah.
And so the name change made a lot of sense, and it really speaks to not just the company we've become, but I think importantly, where we're going as a company as well.
Yeah, no question. I think that's that makes a lot of sense. When you see the Barstool brand, and these things aren't just gaming to begin with.
That's right. That's right. And that's something that we knew we needed to do as a company because regional gaming in and of itself isn't high growth.
Right.
You know, you look across the
sure.
country and you see growth in the low single digits in
right.
most of these markets. And so we consider ourselves a growth company.
Yeah.
And we felt like once PASPA was overturned in May of 2018, that opened the door for us to really think differently about the company, to go digital.
Sure.
And to really focus on an omni-channel strategy because we have structural advantages.
Right.
We own the brands that you mentioned and I mentioned, we own those brands.
Right.
Those aren't joint ventures.
Sure.
We're not
right.
just investors.
Right.
And we also own our brick and mortar assets and those licenses. So for us, as we can get customers, whether it's through online sports betting or a casino visit or online casino or just really loyal followers of our sports media assets and brands and the content people behind those brands, bring them into the ecosystem and then introduce them to all of the other offerings that we have and
sure.
do cross-sale. That's why I feel strongly that really any business sector you look at, if you don't have a very compelling digital and or omni-channel strategy,
right.
you're facing extinction in the relatively near future.
Sure.
And so we needed to pivot. We've pivoted. We've embraced it. And
right.
here we go.
Okay, great, great. So let's talk about the news. The news you announced this week, the first day G2E, it kind of shook up the industry a little bit, but it's all on the land-based side. So we'll start with that side. So let's talk about the hotels you plan to add to some of your properties here.
Yeah, so we had a really exciting announcement on Monday, Roger, to your point, 4 growth projects. And you have to remember that even though a lot of the focus for the industry over the last couple of years has been on digital online
right.
sports betting, at the core, at the core of our
sure.
omni-channel strategy are our brick and mortar casinos.
Right.
They generate most of the revenue and a tremendous amount of cash flow for the company. We've got best in class assets in most of the markets we operate, but there's a few that they aren't best in class.
Right.
And so we've been wanting to address that. Two of the ones that are best in class just needed more hotel capacity. Sure. In the case of M Resort here in Las Vegas, we have 390 rooms today. We've been busting out of our seams for the last several years. Sure, the property performance has been spectacular. Mm-hmm. And so we've been working on that project for some time with our architect and designer, Marnell. And so we announced that we're going to build another hotel about the same size, 374, 75 rooms.
Okay.
So double the size of the hotel, which allows us to do a couple of things, to take on more of the group business.
Sure.
That sometimes we bring groups in, and there are 100 or 200 rooms when they start, and then they grow over the years.
Sure.
And they outgrow us.
Yeah.
And so we cultivate these relationships, and then we hand them on. Off to a competitor, which is not a good plan.
Exactly right.
So this extra capacity, having almost 800 rooms total, allows us to keep more of those groups and then lure the ones back that we lost that outgrew us. So M Resort, no-brainer for us. That's going to be a $200 million project. I think we'll break ground on all four of these projects probably by the end of 23.
Okay.
And then the hotel-only projects are probably 12 to 18-month builds. Okay. And the casino projects, which I'll talk about in a minute, are probably more like 24-month builds. So M Resort, hotel expansion, double the size of the hotel. Hollywood Columbus, another one of our growth properties. Mm-hmm. We've never had a hotel. We opened without one.
Yeah.
And we had to clean up some lease issues with our landlord, GLPI. Okay. Too much detail to get into, but the Columbus and Toledo properties, the lease was structured differently where we actually share 20% of revenue. Mm-hmm. And so you really couldn't invest in a major hotel or any major expansion because all of the upside was going to your landlord, but you were potentially putting the money up front. So we had to solve for that. We solved for that as part of this announcement where not just the four properties that we're covering in detail now on expansion, but we also added three of our other properties, Hollywood Toledo, our property in the Meadows in Pennsylvania, as well as our Perryville property in Maryland. We added those three to the four growth properties and formed a new lease that allowed us to get rid of that 20% rev share.
Okay.
So we can now focus on growth projects at Columbus and Toledo. So Columbus Hotel, 200 rooms, about $100 million investment.
Mm-hmm.
We've been needing a hotel there since day one.
Right,
it's now been seven or 8 years.
Right.
Here we go. Finally, we have the hotel announced and again, start at the end of 2023. That one's probably a 12-month to 15-month build. So end of 24, early 25. And then importantly, we talked earlier about having best-in-class assets. Two of our assets that aren't best-in-class and really have become less competitive over time. They're just dated riverboat barges in Illinois, one in Aurora, one in Joliet. So I'll cover the Joliet one first. We're going to actually move our license about 5 or 6 miles away to a new development, a mixed-use development. So we would we no longer have to be on the water. Illinois passed a law that allows you to get off the water. And so we will no longer be on the water, which brings some efficiencies from a cost perspective for us. But then importantly, there's a lot of revenue upside because the location that we're moving to is right off of two major interstates.
Right.
And 70 and 55.
Okay,
and it's a brand new mixed use development that's going to have residential and commercial, food and beverage, movie theater. Mm-hmm. They're talking to Topgolf. And we would be one of the anchor tenants in this mixed use development.
Okay.
So we feel great about the location. It's a new build. Probably won't do a hotel because there's also going to be other third party hotels in this mixed use development.
Okay.
So really excited about that one. Again, end of 23, we'll probably start. That one, I would imagine, will probably be ready to go in 2025.
Okay.
And then the last one, which is the largest investment, is a $360 million relocation of our Aurora riverboats. And that one, similarly, we're moving. That one, I think we're moving 7 miles away. And it's going to be right off of Interstate 88.
Okay.
And the beauty of that project is that, one, it's right off the interstate. But number two, it's right next to a Simon development that is one of their top performing developments in the country.
Okay.
And so there's 7 or 8 million people a year that visit that Simon Premium Outlet Mall.
Okay.
And we're going to be building right next to that. That will include a hotel.
Okay.
And the way that we are financing these projects, so in total, the investment is $850 million.
Sure.
Our landlord, GLPI, has committed to $225 million now for the Aurora project, which is the one that's moving the fastest. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be at a cap rate of 7.75, which is key for us because that's favorable financing in this current environment. If we went to the debt markets and tried to finance that project, we'd probably be looking at a 10-11% coupon.
Sure.
And so to be able to lock it in at 7.75 with your landlord because their cost of capital is lower is a huge advantage for us. And the city of Aurora is stepping up. The mayor there has been a fantastic partner for us, and they're putting $50 million in the form of a bond toward this project as well. So $360 million turned into $310 million because of the bonds. And then $225 million of that is going to be financed by our landlord. So Penn is going to have to put $85 million of debt on the balance sheet, or we can use our $1.7 billion in cash that we have on the balance sheet right now to move forward with what is a very exciting project. And the other three that I mentioned already, we can choose at whatever point in time we want to, whether we want to take GLPI's favored financing or if we want to finance those ourselves.
Okay. Okay, great.
So a lot there, Ron.
Yeah. I'll parse it a little here.
Yeah.
First of all, Illinois, with the granting of additional licenses in Illinois, I guess you had to consider that because, you know, your property would have been seen as old and dated at that point. So to move them, you know, just a few miles away certainly makes sense.
Yeah, well, we consider the moves to be both offensive and defensive. Yeah. You can sit back and do nothing.
Right.
You can sit on your hands and you can continue to lose market share, lose revenue, and that's not a compelling business strategy from my perspective. I think for us to be able to relocate, so this is not just a, hey, the riverboat barges are old, we need to build something new, but build them at the same location.
Right.
This is a brand new build at favorable locations.
Right.
And so even though there's new supply coming into Illinois, we believe, especially with the Bally's expansion in downtown Chicago, that's not going to affect us. We're in the suburbs.
Right.
So
what
this does is make us a lot more competitive in Joliet. We
have
one other competitor in Joliet. This is going to make us, I think, more formidable there.
Right.
And I think in the case of Aurora, there's some very affluent suburbs of Chicago, Naperville being probably the largest, that are very, very proximate to Aurora. But because of our current location and the condition of the asset, we just don't pull that audience in as effectively as we should. And we will now with this new location. So, yes, there's new supply. So a little bit of defense there. But we think this is going to be more efficient cost structure, getting off the water, not having marine staff and things of that nature, and a lot of upkeep on an older facility. But importantly, we think there's a lot of revenue upside because of all the vehicular traffic and the pedestrian traffic that we're going to have at these locations with the different developments.
IGT is at its peak of excellence, with the Peak Slant 32 at its 20th consecutive month as the number one ranked multi-screen and the number one ranked large form factor Peak 65, and two new cabinets joining the Peak family of top performing hardware, IGT has a Peak gaming machine to fit any floor need. Designed for superior player comfort, modern sleek beauty, and proven performance, all six Peak cabinets stand out gorgeously on the casino floor. Reach your peak of success at igt.com/peak.
You know, a lot of observers, when this REIT phenomenon started in gaming, were worried about just what you were saying, that you know, you can't put money into your property because all the revenue goes to the landlord.
Yeah.
But this is really the first time this has happened, that the landlord has really invested into the property. So how did that come about?
Yeah, well, I think it's the conclusion that both the landlords and the operators have come to is that growth is good for both if you can structure it
right.
And so what we were able to solve for here is an issue we had with the Columbus and Toledo leases that really prevented any major expansion. They want us to expand in Columbus too, but they know we can't do it with this 20% rev share. So to move those assets over into a new lease where you've only got a 1.5% escalator per year, fixed escalator, that allows us to invest. And we can use their money, we can use our money, because with their money comes incremental rent. You might want or not want to do that.
Sure.
But if they have favorable financing, especially in an environment that we're in today, and we're continuing to think about how we can grow this company for the long term and not focus just on what's happening in the now. But these are projects that are going to make sense for us. They're going to make sense for the landlord. And it's growth, which both companies obviously need to have a compelling growth strategy.
Sure. Great. And the M Resort here in Henderson, it's in Henderson, it's not in Las Vegas.
That's right.
And it's almost like a locals hotel also. I mean, you get a lot of people that visit Las Vegas that want to stay away from the Strip, but that's a perfect option for them.
Yeah, it's the business model at M is really interesting, and it's evolved over the years. Mm-hmm. It's really what I consider to be a hybrid customer base where during the weekdays, it's very local, as you would expect.
Sure. Right.
And then in addition to the local business, because of the facility we have and the meeting space and the great rooms and the spa and the pools, we generate a lot of group business as well during the weekdays. And then on the weekends, it really flips into a destination for people from Southern California,
right?
And who don't want to be on the Strip, to your point, right, or want to be at a pool where there's a little bit more intimacy. The property isn't as large, so you can get into restaurants easier,
right,
and you can get a reservation at the spa. And sure. You're not fighting 4,000 other hotel
right.
guests to
right.
try to
for
do
sure.
that.
Yeah.
Maybe you will when we have 800 rooms a little bit
yeah.
Versus today.
Yeah.
But M Resort for us, what a great business. We acquired that property in, time flies, 2010.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And we've now had it for 12 years. And when we acquired it, it was, you know, right out of the recession.
Yeah.
Business was not good in Nevada in the locals market. And we've just invested in that property and, mm-hmm. you know, kept up on the hotel and the restaurant offerings and the gaming floor, new amenities. We have a really strategic partnership with the Raiders there.
Right.
When you walk through there, you'd think that we're their only partner,
right.
Which has worked out really well for us. And we're right next to their practice facility.
Yep.
We have a great relationship with the Golden Knights, and there could be some expansion with them out in that part of
right.
Henderson as well. So we're building this for the long term, and we feel like the partnerships we have, the amenities we have, we're going to be able to drive even more of that destination from Southern California, as well as more of the locals during the weekdays.
Sure. I've been to a couple of events there, and exactly what you mentioned had happened. You know, they outgrew the M and had to move to
yep.
another hotel. But it's great meeting facilities there. There's a bubble, which is like the big
sprung structure. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Which is kind of more exhibition style.
Right,
we do concerts
yeah,
in
sure.
there. If we do larger groups that need exhibition space,
right.
like here at G2E,
sure.
that's where we usually do that. Is
right.
in the sprung structure. We are, as part of the hotel expansion, going to be expanding. By 10, I don't recall if it's 10 or 15,000 square feet,
okay.
our meeting space, so we have more ballroom space as well. So we're continuing to grow that group business
okay.
in addition to all the locals business we
okay.
talked about.
And you'll continue to use the sprung structure then?
We will,
okay.
absolutely.
Great.
Probably even more so once we have the additional hotel capacity because yeah. we'll have more exhibition as opposed to just smaller groups.
Right, okay, great. So you just got out of a deal at the Tropicana where you sold the operations to Bally's.
Yes.
Is there any desire to come to the Strip at any point?
Always a desire.
Yeah.
I think for us, what we've learned, Roger, over the years is that it really has to check several boxes.
Right.
You need to find an asset or assets that have great location,
right?
That have a compelling brand and a following,
right.
that have a database that hopefully they own and they yep. don't share with lots of other properties.
Right.
And this is always the issue when we've talked about, you know, if you're going to ever acquire a property, I'm not saying any are on the market
sure.
right now, but if you're going to look at a property owned by one of our larger competitors
mm-hmm.
and they have 5, 6, 7 on the Strip, you always have to worry about the reverse synergies.
Yeah,
so
right.
when you go in and they unplug their loyalty
sure.
program
right.
and they have other assets they can cross sell those customers to, what is the real run rate of revenue and EBITDA for those properties? So you have to
sure.
you have to really be, I think, deep in your analysis and thorough in your analysis of what really are you, what are you acquiring?
Right.
So I think the price has to be right. The location has to be right. The brand and the audience, the loyalty program and the ownership of that loyalty program have to be right. And I think ideally you'd have more than one.
Sure.
Customers we know when they visit Vegas, they come for 4 or 5 days and they visit 4 or 5 properties.
Right.
They like to walk around. So I think if you only have one, if it's one of the premier properties, you
right.
can probably get away with it.
Right.
Venetian, Palazzo, or
sure.
Wynn Encore, Cosmo. Those are, I think, you can give people enough to do even over 3 or 4 days.
Sure.
But ideally, you'd probably have multiple. But, you know, there has to be a seller, and
sure.
they have to be willing to sell at a price that the buyer wants to buy.
Of course.
So
right.
I think strategically, Roger, we know that hub and spoke model works.
Right.
MGM and Caesars have been proving that for years.
Sure.
I worked for Caesars for 12 years.
Right.
I know it works.
Yes.
And we would love to have a great asset or assets on the Strip, but the stars have to line up.
Yeah.
And right now, there's no stars to
right.
line up for us there, and we'll see down the road.
Yeah, and as long as the M Resort is a great business for you, why not pump into that for sure?
Absolutely. I mean, the M Resort solves lots of things for us, including having a destination for our customers throughout the country
right.
in these regional markets
mm-hmm.
in the Midwest and down south and the Northeast. And when they go to Vegas, they have options to stay with us. And I think with the additional hotel capacity and other non-gaming amenities that we'll be adding, it's even more compelling to stay at the M Resort.
Right.
And a lot of our customers, to the point you made earlier, when they come to Vegas, they actually like to stay off the Strip.
Yeah.
And maybe the trip is only for 2 or 3 days versus 5
right.
days. But the M is a perfect destination
right.
for that type of customer.
And you've got shuttles running all the time, right, to bring them to the Strip.
Of course.
Yeah.
Anytime
right.
the customers want to get to the Strip, then we make that happen seamlessly.
Yeah. Great. So let's move to the omnichannel. Let's talk about the system side first. You bought a company in the UK called GameSys, and
Bally's did that one.
Bally's, I'm sorry.
Yes, we were the Score in Canada for the technology.
So let's talk about the Score. I mean, with Ontario going, you know, full steam right now.
That's right.
That seemed to be a really smart buy.
I mean, for us, Roger, it was really the strategic rationale was threefold.
Right.
One, we've already seen the value early on with the owning a major sports media asset like Barstool Sports, and the Score in Ontario, really throughout Canada, is bigger than ESPN.
Sure. Right.
So and we've had a relationship with the Levy family at the Score because they were one of our skin partners here in the US. So we actually had them, they would operate off of some of our licenses from a sports betting perspective. And we thought they did an amazing job and an amazing brand. Mm-hmm. So for us, the sports media was compelling. Number two, the brand up there, as strong as it is, and we knew that Ontario was legalizing online sports betting and online casino, the brands we have in the US, even including Barstool Sports, though relevant in Canada, are not as strong in Canada, obviously, as they are here in the US. So we felt like this was a great opportunity for us to lead with a brand and a loyal audience on the sports media side because we've seen it work here in the US. So let's do the same thing in Canada. Mm-hmm. And we're live there since April, and it's already turned into our number one market in North America for both online sports betting and online casino.
That's one of the top three market share leaders in Ontario,
They only announced early on what the results have been for the first quarter, and it was in the aggregates. Uh-huh. So I don't know where we sit. I know our market share is low double digit, which is great for us.
Sure.
And again, number one from both a market share as well as total revenues and total handle for sports betting and online casino for us in North America. So it's been a home run market for us.
Right.
I don't know where everyone else sits. Bet365 was in that market as a gray market operator for a long time. They did flip to a regulated offering and platform. They're probably number one.
Right.
And then we're probably somewhere in that mix of two or three with FanDuel or DraftKings. We haven't seen the exact numbers come out yet, but we're positioned very well there. And then, of course, the main strategic rationale for that acquisition was the question you were getting to, which is it's a technology company.
Sure, right.
They had been working on their own technology platforms for their player account management as well as their risk and trading services platform. And they've built all of their own products as a sports media company, and we have a tremendous amount of confidence that they would deliver best-in-class platforms for sports betting and online casino. And they have now done that.
Yeah.
So when we made our acquisition, they were developing those platforms. Mm-hmm. They're now live on both of those platforms. Okay. So they're 100% on their own tech stack in Ontario. And the plan for us, Roger, is to move that same tech stack down here to the US and for us to migrate over to the Score's PAM and their risk and trading platform in the summer of 2023.
Okay.
So we're now, whatever that is, eight or 9 months away from
that.
And we feel really, really good about that because we've seen already the benefits of owning your own technology. And then therefore you control the product roadmap. And so you want to add new features and functionality, then you just do it as opposed to relying on third parties. And we have two third party partners in the US that have been great partners, Cambi and White Hat Gaming. But at the end of the day, they are B2B providers, and our business is B2C.
Right.
And so there are times where we want features and functionality and capabilities that might be important for us.
Right.
For example, for us to be able to incorporate social media and digital into the sports betting experience because of the brands we own and the content people like Dave Portnoy and Big Cat behind, that's important for us.
Yeah.
But for the rest of Cambi's clients or White Hat's clients, it might not be important. And so they have to satisfy the least common denominator. What does everybody want?
Yeah,
and so let me prioritize that way. So it's no one's fault, but for us to own our own technology and product roadmap long-term was critical. That was the main strategic reason. But of course, the brand, sports media, and then of course, how compelling and the market share results have been in Canada are all reasons why that acquisition for Penn made a tremendous amount of sense.
Sure. Last time we talked, you just acquired a game studio as well.
Yes.
How is that running?
Good. Very good. Hit Points. We renamed it Penn Game Studios.
Okay.
And we've been putting out three or four of our own proprietary games per quarter.
Right.
We now are seeing a lot of traction, especially on the digital blackjack games. Right. We're able to brand those to Barstool and some of the other IP that we have in the portfolio. We're about to launch the Score branded blackjack, digital blackjack version in Canada, I believe in the next 4 to 6 weeks. And what we're seeing is that 20% of our total handle of online casino here in the US are on games that we produced, which on the land-based side, we've never been able to figure out.
Sure.
You know, we've tried some different game themes and they always fail.
Yeah.
And so you always go back to Cygames product and Aristocrat and IGT over the years. And online, customers are willing to try different types of games that they wouldn't try inside of casino. I think some of that's a demographic difference. If you have younger people online than you do on average in your casinos. And they're going to try out the brand, the games that are providing good content and are maybe associated with brands that they identify with, like Barstool and like The Score.
Sure. And you can always put them higher on your website,
which as we do,
which is a big which is a big drawback for anybody who's trying to get their just their content out there.
No question.
At the bottom,
And look, we have great content partners, all the ones we mentioned, Cygames, IGT, Aristocrat, but there's economic differences with games that you produce and offer versus ones that you have to pay rev shares on. Right. So we're definitely going to highlight the ones that we've created ourselves first.
Okay, great. So let's talk about your big brand, Barstool. You know, it's becoming more prevalent. I see it on Instagram all the time.
Yes.
And you know, all the characters on there is just amazing. I have to watch the pizza thing every time it comes up.
Yes, I do too. Yeah. Dave's very entertaining.
Yeah, he is. But so you told me last time that you were committed to buying the entire company, and indeed you've done that.
Yes.
So what was your rationale to really you did it very quickly? It was even before the deadline, correct?
Well, we had a 6 month notification requirement.
Okay.
So we were notifying the current owners of the Barstool that we don't own. So we own 36% today.
Right.
We had to notify the owners of the other 64% that we were planning to exercise our call option to acquire the rest of Barstool. So that will actually happen in February.
Yep.
But we've been treating this investment from day one as though we were going to be the 100% owners of Barstool, because the brands, the audience, the people behind the brands, the partners that they've been, Eric and Nardini and Dave Portnoy and Dan Katz, and the list goes on and on and on. They've got the number one sports podcast in North America with Pardon My Take, number one hockey podcast with Spit and Chicklets, number one golf podcast. It's amazing. And I think, Roger, what's interesting is that there's more, I think people notice it more, maybe because it was a little bit behind the scenes, and now that it's part of a public company, people notice it more. And they're so brilliant on how they pivot from social media platform to social media platform.
Right.
Where TikTok, when I met Dave and Erica and Dan, wasn't even a thing. It was you were just starting to hear about TikTok in the summer of 19. And now they're one of the biggest distributors of content on TikTok in the US.
Yeah.
So they just embrace these platforms. They have amazing content. The fans love it. Can't get enough of it.
Yeah.
But you've got to be where the fans are and want to be. And TikTok is another example, in addition to Instagram, where you see them, or Twitter, where I follow them. We're on all of them.
Yeah.
And so for us, given not only where we are today in terms of sports betting being a big opportunity in front of us, and online casino, and just digital overall, Barstool Sports, obviously, great brand to have, great people behind the brand. And for us, it also makes our audience and our user base and our database so much younger.
Right.
Right. So that core audience with Barstool is 21 to 35, 39 years old. The average age of our brick and mortar casino customer was always early 50s.
Right.
So what we've seen between the result of the pandemic and there being more limited forms of entertainment, and there was no movie, you couldn't go to the movies, you couldn't go to a concert, you couldn't go to a sporting event, you couldn't go to a bar.
Right.
And so casinos were open.
Sure.
And we saw younger people come in. And because we have an association with Barstool Sports and we have Barstool branded sports books and sports bars inside, our youngest age segment, this is actually very compelling, Roger. I was just looking at this on the flight in a couple of days ago. That 21 to 45 year old age segment in 2019, so pre-pandemic and pre-Barstool, represented just over 10% of our total revenue.
Yeah.
And here we are 3 years later and it's doubled. It's almost 20% of our total revenue.
Wow.
And growing the fastest. Yeah. So it's going to be over 20 soon.
Yeah.
And that's why this acquisition, all of those reasons, the brands, the content, the age, the demo of that core customer, the end user, the fan of Barstool Sports, And the score is a beautiful sweet spot for us, right in the middle.
Yeah.
So the average age of a score fan and app user is in their 30s and 40s. So mm-hmm. you've got the 20s and early 30s right. covered with Barstool. You've got the 30s and 40s covered with the score. And then you got 50 plus on average in your brick and mortar casino, although right. that's getting younger.
Yeah, sure.
But we really have all of the different age and demographics covered between the brands that we have and the digital offerings and the land-based offerings.
You know, what I like about about Barstool is that they don't hit you over the head with betting. You know, I've seen a lot of these shows that this is a sports betting show, and it's just betting, you know. But with Barstool, it's like they talk about the players and the situations, and then, by the way, this might be an edge for you if you're going to bet on
yes.
it. So, is that something that really draws the people in? Personally, I don't like to be hit over the head with betting, you know?
Look, that fan base is so loyal. And one of the reasons, if Dave were sitting here with us, he would say, we are as authentic as it comes.
Right.
And so I'm not going to push a product. I'm not going to push a bet. I'm not going to push anything, nor is anyone else at Barstool, to our audience. And that's we are believers.
Right.
And so there's times where they have their own sports betting shows, but it's also meant to be fun and irreverent and satirical and Saturday Night Live-ish.
Right.
And so they do it their own way. Yeah. And in that, they're serious about sports betting. Big Cat and Dave love to bet on sports.
Right.
But you're going to laugh while you watch their show.
Right.
And you're not going to feel hit over the head of them pushing something on you.
Right.
But they'll let you know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And if you want to join them and the bets that they're making, and then you want to watch them on live stream,
right.
you can do that. Yeah. If you don't want to, no problem. But quickest way to turn off that audience is to start hitting them over the head and pushing products and offerings
right.
that you don't believe in or aren't authentic
right.
to who you are and what you represent. And
right.
they will never change. And that's part of what drew us to
right.
the brands.
Okay. So when you mention authentic, I always think of esports, because esports is, if you're not authentic, you get kicked to the curb very quickly there.
Yeah.
Is there any interest at Penn in esports?
There is. We it's something that we have been studying for some time, Roger. And the score actually is a very, they've been investing in esports for some time now. They've got hundreds of thousands of users that just follow their esports coverage.
Uh-huh.
So there's something there.
Yeah.
I haven't figured out yet. We collectively haven't figured out yet. What are those experiences that you can offer esports fans that are monetizable for the end user, for the operator, I should say. So we know the content that they love and we understand the content. The question is, are there ways to work with that audience from creating experiences and offerings that they want that are also good for the business and the P&L? And we haven't figured that out yet, but there's something there. There's way too much popularity.
Right.
My son is an e-gamer. I mean, it's that generation of teenagers and people in their 20s and early 30s that have been playing video games since they were teenagers. And, you know, people think about esports and e-gamers as though they're all teenagers, and they're not.
They were
e-gamers as teenagers.
Yeah. Sure.
Now they're in their 30s and 40s, and there's people in their 50s that
my 25-year-old son is still playing.
Absolutely, and he's not the only one.
Yeah,
lots of people in their 20s and 30s, just like in their teens, that are playing video games, sometimes for fun and sometimes to make money.
Right.
Some of those esports stars on Twitch are making millions and millions of dollars with sponsorships.
Yeah.
So it's real. I think those esports celebrities have figured out how to monetize themselves and the likeness. We, as an operator and somebody who can create a platform where esports fans can go and talk about esports, we know how to do all of that. But we have to figure out that there's a way to create a deeper relationship with esports than we have today. So it's actually, I'm glad you asked, it's a priority for us. Erica and I and the Levy family, we talk about this. We haven't figured it out yet, but it's something we will figure this out.
Yeah, we've been trying to figure it out for years, but there is something there. With all that noise, there's got to be something there.
No doubt. And we have the right people and the right brands to figure it out. So we have to figure out how to deepen the relationship with the consumer and create experiences that they can't find anywhere else. And that's a priority.
Okay, great. Well, Dave, I have a lot. Jay, I have a lot more questions I could ask you, but here we are at G2E, and I know you've got meetings and I've got meetings, so I'm going to stop it right there. But we'll get back together again, definitely within another year, because so much has changed since the last time we talked.
No question.
We got to stay abreast with you guys.
Yeah, so. Always enjoy our time together.
Absolutely.
Roger. Have for decades. You're the best at what you do, and happy to be a part of it with you, and
Great.
Look forward to the next time we get together.
Great. Well, thank you.
Hope you enjoyed this week's podcast sponsored by IGT, which is at the peak of excellence with an entire lineup of top-ranked gaming machines. Reach your peak of success at IGT.com/peak. To learn more about Penn Entertainment and its quest to control both land-based and online gaming, visit GGBMagazine.com. Subscribe to GGB News to get all the news of the gaming industry delivered to your desktop every Monday morning. Sign up at GGBNews.com and use the coupon code GGB180 for a free subscription. Don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on Amazon, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB Podcast.